Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with a mover and shaker in the book world. Today, we're going to be talking to Mike Foster about his new book, The Secure CEO. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Simon.
Perhaps we could start with a little biographical information. Who is Mike Foster?
Mike Foster is a guy who started out early in his life finding he could get along with computers even better than people. And so he got really good at understanding computers. And as time went on, he found out that people were pretty cool too. And he started to learn how to get along with people. And then he found himself one day the owner of a small business and learned management. And now his pleasure in life is going around helping executives solve their IT challenges, because there are certainly plenty, and I find that most executives, the only part they really want to be involved with in IT is whenever IT wants to make a purchase of some kind, and it's a budget issue. And once they give the yay or nay on that, they pretty much hand everything over to the IT department and just trust that everything will work right.
So you're kind of in the position where you're trying to marry management to the technical side of the company.
That's right. And without management needing to understand the technology, in fact, as you well know with your history, it's definitely better in most cases if the executives and management or the owner of a small business doesn't try to meddle in the IT. The IT professionals definitely appreciate just kind of being left alone to do their job. But it's also important that the executives step up to the plate in the areas they need to. For example, if the executives are in a situation where they want to allow every employee to install any program they want to, pretty soon an employee might install a program such as LimeWire, which means that now all the corporate data could be exposed on the internet to people you would never ever want to see the data. And that's where the IT department needs the executive to back them up and say, you know what, everybody can't install every program they want to anymore. All the new programs have to be installed by the IT department around the
right.
Place, that's the case.
A book about computer security may not be a subject that the average person might think would have much relevance to them. I actually disagree. I think everyone should have a basic understanding. You don't have to be the CEO of a company. You can just be an employee. But everyone should have an understanding of why the computers need to be secure. Your thoughts?
I completely agree. I wrote the book about that. You know, it's on purpose, shortened to the point, because I don't think everybody needs to understand all the details. That's what the IT professionals do. But it certainly is important to have a basic working knowledge of some of the dangers that are out there right now, and frankly, how easy and simple it is to protect yourself from them, which is, you know, important. I mean, just a couple days ago, on January the 7th, there were people that were going online and paying their bills through bill payment places called CheckFree, and they were getting redirected to a website in the Ukraine, and the website in the Ukraine would steal their information, and it would try to actually infect their computer. So here you have an employee that's doing their job, or even someone working from home, and they want to go pay their insurance for the year, or they want to go pay whatever bill, or even purchase something, and little do they know, in the process, their computer's getting infected.
Right. As I said, I really enjoyed your book, and I could certainly relate to it. The Secure CEO, which is the title of the book, contains many lovely horror stories. Let's talk for a couple of minutes about two of them. I actually worked for a thriving family-run business in the San Diego area. This was in the mid-90s. And I reported directly to the CEO. Life was fine. Yes, life was very busy, but, you know, things did get done in a timely fashion. Along came a new controller, and she was hell-bent on election, on consuming the IT department into her section, accounting. And I hate to say it, she was successful. And basically everything went south really, really quickly after that. What is it about accounting and HR departments that always want to exercise control over the IT beast?
It's a good question, and I find that I run into different reasons that people have. Sometimes it seems to be that HR professional thinks that that's part of their pay, is to be able to say no to the IT spending, especially if it's a large budget item. I find sometimes with CFOs that they feel like their job is to save money for the company, which of course it is. But if the company is still running on an ancient server that's 10 years old, and they decide the best way to save money is to wait one more year before replacing it, if that server crashes in that 10th year or 5th year or whatever year it is, then certainly they realize they made the wrong choice. It's extremely expensive to have all of your employees doing nothing. But it seems like it's sometimes set up by the CEO to be that way, where the CEO will explain, look, the IT department can't tell the difference between what they want and what they need. So they ask the CFO or HR, whoever's in charge of IT, they say it's up to you to determine the difference between what they want and what they need. And frequently that person managing the IT department doesn't have enough knowledge or background to truly discern the difference between those two.
There's a communication breakdown, basically. I mean, you have two different mindsets, and both need to relearn some things. IT needs to be able to talk in plain English to the accounting people, and the accounting people need to take some time out and try and understand the technology challenges. Agree?
I agree. And there's even one more piece, if I may, to add on top of that as icing. I need my IT professionals to stand up and be more assertive. The story you're probably referring to was the company out on the West Coast that's now out of business, and they had me come rushing in because they had a disaster. It was a company that stored drafting images, an architectural firm, on all of their work, basically, the business. It was all stored on a server, and the backup had not been working for a long time. An IT professional would go in to the CFO, to whom he reported, and say, look, it's going to cost $1,600 to fix our backup, and I need to do this. And as always, the CFO would say, you know what, you're over budget again. Come back next month. And of course, the CFO understood a little bit about technology, and he knew that the server had a RAID array, which is a little bit technical, but
right.
I know you know what it is, Simon. The other listeners could think of it as basically two hard drives that maintain being a mirror of each other. It's actually an oversimplification, but the idea is that if one of your hard drives dies, the other drives in the system know everything it knew, and that does offer a bit of protection. But the problem is their RAID array failed, and they lost all of their data, and there was no backup. And as a result, the company went out of business. They lost everything. They had no way to continue. And the CFO, of course, was blaming the IT professional, and the IT professional was blaming the CFO. And I asked the IT professional why there weren't his heel prints in the desk of the CFO from him, the IT professional standing on the CFO's desk saying, listen to me, Raider Rays are wonderful, but what if the Raider Ray fails? Or what if we get a virus? Or what if someone hacks in and deletes all of our data? I mean, I find that many times IT professionals are somewhat timid when it comes to speaking up to the people they report to, which I can appreciate. They want to keep their job. But at the same time, that IT professional ended up losing his job because the business went under.
Right. Another horror story. I'll use my personal example, and I'm sure you have one to go along with it. In fact, the story you just told. I was working for the same company, and I ended up with 30 remote servers. We had 30 remote locations, and no backup system. A proposal to install 30 tape backup systems at first fell on completely deaf ears, and I did what you suggested, you know, stood on his desk and said, look, this ain't gonna work. Actually, what happened was I got a response of, so who cares? You know, if we lose a server, maybe we lose 1,000 transactions, but it's no big deal. We have a paper backup in the form of invoices, and head office can manually enter that information, you know, in a day. And that would actually cost way less than the $15,000 solution that I was proposing. Well, you can guess what happened. We did indeed lose those 1,000 invoices, and my name was absolute mud. Not that I was within 200 miles of where the event actually happened, but it is a problem. You know, what is your real advice to the IT professional? You know, do we just need to dumb down our method of communication with management?
What I share with my IT professionals whom I coach is that executives think in terms of dollars and cents most of the time when it comes to those type of IT decisions. And you did the right thing. You know, you explained to them we would lose this money. And I would encourage my IT professionals to actually document every aspect of what truly is going to be lost, which lots of times the IT professional hasn't thought of everything. For example, there's the payroll to pay the people in your situation to re-enter those transactions. And if those people were already people in the organization, which is sometimes the case, then the work they would normally be doing is now not being done because they're doing the redo work. So it kind of creates a wave, sort of. I know I live out in Napa, California, and when I am headed into San Francisco, sometimes the traffic's all backed up from an accident that happened 4 hours before, but the
right.
Wave is still going. So that's kind of what businesses face. And when that can be put into dollars and cents, then sometimes it'll get more attention. Branding is very important. I was meeting with a company yesterday that they had a laptop that got stolen, and as a result of that, since there was private data on the laptop and the laptop was not using full disk encryption, they had to mail out letters to all of their clients saying that it's possible some of your private information has been released out into the world. And we don't think so, but it's possible. And
ouch.
Of course, the damage that's done to their branding is enormous.
Oh, and yes.
As you can imagine, the executives are very excited right now about getting very good security in place. And they thought they had great security. They were told they had great security, but now this has happened. So they realized maybe they're going to take a little bit deeper look at it.
Mm-hmm. The internet, in my mind, is very much a double-edged sword for business. It's either the greatest productivity tool of all time through things like email and e-commerce, or it's the biggest time waster of all time with instant messenger, games, music, and of course, pornography. What can a company do to maximize the productive use of the internet?
As people are browsing, because you're right, the internet is here to stay. A lot of organizations are even using applications that live out on the internet now.
Mm-hmm.
Software as a service. And what I find when I work with companies is that sometimes they understand about content management software that will allow them to restrict users from going to the wrong kind of websites, but allow users to go to the business-approved websites. But many times, they kind of get stuck in the ready, aim mode, and they never go ahead and start the software. And the reason is because they feel like they can't define what are good sites and what are bad sites, so to speak. And what I teach them to do, and this would help your listeners, is to divide websites into three categories, not two. So you have one category, category one, that are business-related sites. Absolutely, we want our employees going there. And those are approved. Then category two, those are the ones where all the politics come in and there's a lot of argument about is this good or bad. And then category three would be the bad sites, which you gave some examples of, like porn, gambling, sites we're sure we would not want people going to from work. And I express to companies, I encourage them to go ahead and start blocking and just block the number three sites for now. But at least get going blocking something. You got to pull the trigger and institute that software, and there are even free tools that companies can use to do that kind of blocking that doesn't cost a penny other than a little bit of the IT professional's time to set up the routers to use those tools like OpenDNS. But
right.
Once you can start restricting the bad stuff, that protects the company dramatically. It's kind of the 80-20 rule. And then you can go through the maybe years-long argument about other websites. There was something that happened 3 days ago is Facebook found, or excuse me, it wasn't Facebook, it was LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. I heard that one.
Yeah, 27 different celebrities with fake, the celebrities didn't do it, other people did. And you would go to LinkedIn, and then they would say, click here to see naked pictures of Kirsten Dunst, for example. And it wouldn't be any naked pictures, it would just be software that would try to infect her computer.
Right. That similar thing happened to Twitter a few days ago.
That's yep. Exactly right. And Blogspot and Flickr, and there have been a bunch of them. It's an ongoing problem. Web 2.0, like you said, it fits in with your double-edged sword analogy because it's wonderful that people can go build a site and put information there and communicate freely. The other side of the sword is someone could imitate you and pretend to be you and put mm-hmm. something up there you would never want to put up there.
Right. The net is also a very rich source for viruses and malware. Again, what should the non-IT management do? In the accounting world, it's pretty clear. Most companies use an external auditor to check the books annually or periodically. Would you recommend an external computer audit on a pretty regular basis just to keep everyone on their toes, keep everything above board?
Absolutely. Companies regularly get their books audited, and largely because of regulations, and we're seeing more and more regulations requiring IT audits now. And the IT audit, if it's done correctly, can certainly be very beneficial for both the executives and the IT department, because sometimes the IT department has been saying, we need to do such and such, And when an external auditor comes in and says, yeah, that's right, then it kind of tends to tear down the resistance of the executives. And they say, well, okay, and then it gets done.
Right.
And of course, the executives can sleep better at night knowing they've had an audit.
The problem, though, is trying to persuade the IT professional that it's not that his work is being questioned. You know, and many IT people I know feel affronted if their boss comes to them and says, you know, oh, we're going to bring in someone from the outside to check this out. You know, how do you break that barrier down?
And along with that barrier is the fact that many executives are actually terrified that their IT professional will react in a terrible way. And executives, it's interesting because executives lots of times fear their IT professional is going to get mad and delete all the data on the server and then quit their job and leave.
Right.
A lot of time, IT executives are constantly worried that their boss is going to fire them or lay them off or something else. So it sets up that big communication gap. But I have found that many times, since, of course, I do audits as part of my consulting, when I shake the IT professional's hand when I first meet them, it sometimes it feels like a fish. It's so wet and cold.
Right.
They're a little scared that I'm there, but the good thing is every time I come back, they're arms around my shoulders, so to speak. They understand.
Right.
So I've never really found how to prevent that. Some IT professionals actually feel very excited about having another set of eyes come because they think, wow, you know, I can only learn from here. And that helps so much when the executive presents it to the IT professional in that way. Such as, hey, you know, I've found a guy who's been doing IT for over 20 years. He helps companies take IT to the next level. I trust that you're doing everything just fine. Are you willing to let this guy come in and offer us suggestions? Who knows? Maybe he'll even agree with some of the stuff you've been asking us to buy. And, of course, the funny thing is, I know as an auditor, I pride myself in showing companies how to fix things without spending any money. There's so much nowadays you can do that doesn't cost money. It's just changing the way things are handled.
Right. Most of the popular press, you know, screams headlines at you about how we need, you know, 50,000 or more trained IT people. My experience, though, is that there's a so-called IT expert on every darn street corner, and most of them I wouldn't entertain in the woodshed. How do you find a credible outside expert?
That has got to be one of the top 10 questions I get asked through the year over and over and over again. And the best answer that I have is to, number one, do a background check on them, because it's frightening what you'll discover sometimes. Number two, make sure they're certified. Microsoft has a wonderful certification program called Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer. People in the business refer to it as MCSE. And that indicates that the person at least memorized a bunch of answers to the exam, but those answers contain really good stuff in there. And the exams are designed to try to weed out those kind of people, the paper MCSEs, if you will. But that's very important. And then the third thing would be experience. You can certainly find someone that just earned their MCSE, but they've had very little experience. That would be a very poor choice for most companies. The experience is very important to go along with the certification. I certainly wouldn't want one or the other individually. So many companies, what happens is, as they're growing, one day they wake up and realize they need an IT professional, but instead of hiring one, they go down to one of the other departments and find somebody using a mouse, and they say, hey, you're using that mouse pretty good. You're in charge of IT now, too. And so many companies, their IT professional just kind of got dumped into the role, and they've been doing a good job, but some of the people they asked for help through the years didn't give them the best answers. So now you have an IT professional that's frustrated because part of the computer system won't work the way it should. But the fact is, the should that they have in their mind is inaccurate because their friend, who they respected and trusted, gave them poor information. That's one of the best parts about certification. It kind of clears out the cobwebs, and you can get right down to what is the software indeed supposed to do, and if it isn't, what are the things you do about that?
In the book, that there's a clear demarcation. That there's computer security really isn't just about protecting you from the outside world. You need to protect yourself from internally as well. And you make several references. I know these are Windows-based, about using group policies. There are things that you don't want your average user to be able to, to be able to do. One example is installing their own programs. You mentioned earlier LimeWire. That could be an absolute nightmare for a company if people are using LimeWire. Up until a few months ago, I ran a computer lab that was open to the public. Naturally, we didn't want people installing programs, and just as importantly, we didn't want them installing viruses. So we used group policies to lock those computers down. We used a filter to prevent access to the more unsavory websites, and we certainly had up-to-date virus protection on all of the computers. On paper, it looked like Fort Knox. In actual fact, though, it was as leaky as a sieve. Regular users, not hackers, not professionals, just regular people, figured out how they could run their own programs. It was simple. The ubiquitous thumb drive, you know, the $20 device that stores a gig of data. Suddenly people were running Firefox and other programs. How can you stop that happening?
There are actually tools that you can get that will block the USB devices from running. And we're seeing the group policies being expanded to start to include that as we move forward in operating systems. Although I certainly still use Windows XP in all of my Sirius systems. I've had some challenges with Vista, and I'm looking forward to Windows 7. But those operating systems, Vista and Windows 7, once all of us choose to adopt them, which I'm certainly not rushing people to do at this point, but they will offer by themselves some tools to prevent that. And there are already third-party tools that will help you. And another nice thing is a tube of epoxy. I've actually met people that fill USB ports with epoxy. So that takes care of that problem. Another service, which I'm sure you're familiar with, is using a technology called thin clients, where basically what the users have in front of them is nothing more than a screen and a keyboard. There's no DVD, there's no USB,
right?
Nothing. It's just a screen and a keyboard, so that helps eliminate that problem.
Mm. In fact, one enterprising soul that I came across found a way to get to his favorite porn sites, and that was by using Google Translate. By translating English to English, he effectively found a proxy server which circumnavigated our filter.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah. It was a class act. In the Secure CEO, you make a convincing case that all software should be kept up to date and all patches applied in a timely fashion. A recent article I read claimed that Microsoft Vista only had about 20% penetration in the business world. Your thoughts on that? Are people making a mistake by not upgrading?
Well, and I'm very glad you asked that question, because I want to differentiate between two words that sound the same, but in the Windows world are actually different. That would be the term update versus upgrade. Upgrade would be moving toward Vista or in the future Windows 7, and I'm certainly not encouraging people to upgrade to those operating systems right now, although I'm sure Microsoft doesn't want to hear that. It's interesting, they aren't even really talking about Vista anymore.
Right.
It's the bad word in a way. But update is very important. That means that you're putting patches onto your existing operating system or your existing Adobe Reader or your existing Flash Player or whatever you have, your Apple Macintosh, for example. I have several Macs, and my Macs need to be patched regularly. But those are the result. Those patches oftentimes are the result of someone finding a way to penetrate the operating system in a to exploit a security vulnerability, to steal data or do something else you certainly wouldn't want someone to want to be able to do to your system. So Apple, Microsoft, Adobe, whoever it is, they release an update to their software which prevents criminals, cyber criminals, from being able to exploit that type of attack. And I always have the caveats of test the patches on test machines and always have backups. But with those two things in place, deploying the updates is crucially important. And they need to be deployed in a staged manner. That means if a company has 10 computers, they put the patch first on one. And if it works fine there, maybe a couple others. And if they're okay, then three or four more. And if they're okay, the rest of them. And, of course, if the company has 10,000 computers, you would still start with five or six and then work your way up in ever larger numbers over four or five stages. So if they discover there's a problem with the patch, and maybe the company's ERP system or their email or something like that, they can stop the patch where it is, roll it back to the prior level of where there wasn't a problem, figure out what was wrong, and then finish deploying the patch. But Microsoft, and for corporations, Microsoft offers a free tool to be able to do that called Windows Server Update Services.
Right.
And there's some other tools out there that'll help you take care of your system. There's some really neat ones that are available that will actually run through even a home computer and tell you if there's a problem. There's a company that does that, and their website is SECUNIA. So like Sierra Echo Charlie Uniform November India Alpha. And it's really neat because you can just download a little program and it scans your computer and it tells you if you have any programs that need to be patched. And if there are, it helps walk you through patching them. And for people to use on their home computers, it's free, that tool is. And if you want to use it in the business, it's very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm. What sort of feedback are you getting about the Secure CEO?
People love it. People who read it love it. I've found that, I targeted it toward executives and corporations because that's primarily my audience when I'm speaking. But I'm finding that a lot of other people are getting the book. And they're learning a lot from it as well because it's written in plain English, and it's short. It covers a whole lot of topics in 40 short chapters that are very easy to digest. And one of the blessings I was given is to explain highly technical material in a way that it's pretty easy to digest. And the IT professionals who read it tell me how excited they are as well. Because they say, I've been trying to tell my boss this all along, but he wouldn't listen to me.
Where can people get a copy of it? Do you have a website?
I do. It's certainly the easiest one for people to remember is Amazon.com. They can certainly acquire it there. And they can also buy it off either any of my websites that are out there. One of them is FosterInstitute.com, and another is KeepMyNetworkSafe.com. But on both of those websites, you can't miss the encouragement to find that book and read about it and use it to take care of your network.
And I'll give you some free advertising here. I do recommend that people pick this book up. You do not need to be in upper management of a large corporation to get valuable, valuable information. I've Never. Actually, I'll retract that. Only once in my career as a reviewer have I ever met an author that was happy to stop at just one book. And in fact, the one author I did meet, I heard from him yesterday, and he's now changed his mind and is hard at work on his second book. Are we going to be seeing more from you?
I'm certain. That's one thing about technology. It changes all the time. And especially with security technology, it seems to be changing even faster than regular technology because there's such a need for it. We're even seeing it at a national level, the most recent election and some of the other things that are going on. So absolutely, you can count on it. There's a lot of material up in the blog, which will probably find its way into the next book.
I'll be looking forward to it. Writing about technical stuff for the layman is not an easy task. I know because I've done it. I wrote a whole series of textbooks, if you will, to go with classes that I was teaching. Did you find it a real challenge? Hello?
The interesting thing about it is that I've spoken, you know, I started out in the retail computer business and writing software for people. Gosh, I don't even know how many years ago, over 20. And all of my customers needed to be able to understand in English what was happening. So it just seemed natural to me to express to them in plain English what's up. And I found that it was the best way to build trust with them and help them understand that technology has not got to be something to be concerned about as long as it's used the right way. It actually can be, I don't know, I was going to say warm and fuzzy, but I think that might be stretching it. But it certainly can be beneficial, especially if someone can get more work done faster and then go home and spend the rest of the day with their family. And when technology is used in those ways, it really pays off as far as I'm concerned.
Alas, our time is up, and as is always the case when I get to talk to a really, really interesting guy like you, Mike, I've run over, but I do need to bring this show to a close. I've been talking to Mike Foster about his wonderful new book, The Secure CEO, and I can thoroughly recommend it. Mike, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us this morning.
My pleasure, Simon. Thank you.
Okay, this is Simon Barrett saying goodbye from Blogger News on the radio. We will have another show probably within the next few days. Goodbye and have a great day.